Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
A bump in the night, your heart fills with dread. Probably a murderer who wants you dead. It could be a ghost, a demon, or worse. Perhaps you're the victim of a witch's curse. It's hopeless, you're doomed, you'd call a priest if you could. You'd rather just listen to who? Sinisterhood.
I'm gonna kill you.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Freaky Friday, where we tell your odd but true stories. It is Friday, March 6, 2026. Thank you so much for joining us. There is a lot going on in the world today, and we hope that this offers a little escape for you this Freaky Friday. We've curated a lineup of 6 stories that you all have taken the time to send in to us, and some of these stories you might not have heard for a hot minute. They were some early episode submissions that we wanted to bring back to the top of your mind here that, quite frankly, we couldn't stop thinking about them after we got them, whether it's because of what happened in the story or the proximity to us is with that last one. So if you're at McKinney Falls State Park, listen up and let us know if you see the cryptid mentioned in that. But until then, we've got a brand new episode for you coming up next week. We've got Sunday Scaries this Sunday for free on Patreon. It's free every Sunday at 8:30 p.m. Central, where we react to your videos that you send in to us and hang out with you in the chat and commiserate, and honestly, where you bring us live news sometimes in the chat. So make sure you're signed up for free on Patreon and join us this Sunday, 8:30 p.m. Central for Sunday Scaries. And if you don't have plans, February 8th through 12th, 2027, we hope that you will join us aboard Crime Wave at Sea. It is the True Crime Festival at Sea with a stacked lineup. The last one sold out. This one will too. It's not only us. It's Henry and Ed from Last Podcast, Dan and Lindsay from Scared to Death. This time we've got Casey from Case File coming out on stage talking with Vicky Petratis, who previously appeared on Freaky Friday, and we appreciate her for that. Can't wait to hang out with her on the cruise, as well as Richard from Unexplained. You got True Crime Garage, True Crime Campfire, Paranormal Chicks, so many more performances, recordings, amenities, destinations. It's a bigger ship. They've got no fee payment plans, just $99 down, and you get $100 off your stateroom and a private meet and greet with us if you go to crimewaveatsea.com/sinister or use code sinister at checkout. And like we said, whoever books the 69th cabin, we're doing a private dinner with you. So if you're number 69, we'll tell you. But go to crimewaveatsea.com and use code sinister. And we appreciate you spending some of your Friday with us. And we hope this, like we said, takes you away. I know it said you're going to hear the title of this first story and be like, really, Heather? But you know, we all, that's the type of folks that listen to this. I feel like this will, these kind of stories always rivet me because they leave me riveted. I'm not riveted physically, but you know what I mean. I'm always left riveted because what if it were me? But we thank all of our submitters. If you've got an odd but true story that you want us to react to, maybe you've encountered Bigfoot, you've seen a UFO, go over to Freaky Friday. You know the drill. Now, let's get freaky.
Well, this next one is from Mary, and this is UFO or Secret Military Project. Hey, y'all, I'm so excited to send in this story because I think it's got just enough speculative information to get you both thinking. Before I start, I just want to add a little side note and thank you both for the candor you use when talking about your dads. I'm 26 and my dad was recently diagnosed with terminal cancer. With it has come all of the emotions, sometimes while walking past dads and their little children, sometimes while watching any movie with the dead parent storyline peppered in, and sometimes while just sitting in my own head. Hearing you both talk about your dads, feeling their presences, and just hearing that you found a way to exist in a world without them has helped me so much. Okay, enough of that. My sad girl hour is over, and time for a UFO sighting story. Oh, my name is Mary. Feel free to use that. I worked at a sleepaway summer camp in upstate New York for years. I run my own one now. Yes, HBIC Energy. And during the school year, I used to do a lot of work on the property while searching for a big girl job on the side. We'd have our campers come up for a weekend during the school year for various campy activities, keep them engaged in the camp community, and just get them a few hours out of the city. I also lived on the property during the off-season, aka me living in the woods with three other people on 1,100 acres and no one else. So I'd get to these sessions early and help prep. One afternoon in about November 2017, I'm driving on the property with a coworker, delivering sheets and blankets to some cabins. As we crest a hill, which is also the edge of our lake, we see three huge, gray, plane-esque looking objects hovering about a quarter mile in front of us over the lake and very low to the ground compared to typical planes that fly over the area. Pardon me? This was not part of the camp counselor job description, and I'm only interested in these planes if they're planning on dropping these sheets off at the top of the hill for me. Naturally, we stop the car in the middle of the road and start shrieking at each other, "You see this, right?" The walking zeitgeist we are, we immediately open up Snapchat to get this shit on video. Except, they won't show up on our cameras. I'm watching these literal UFOs in front of my face, almost military looking, matte gray fucking machines in the sky. But I glance to my phone and it's blue skies, baby. My Snapchat looked as though it was a normal sky with nothing in it. I turn around to look out the back window to see if there's anything else around us, because now I'm sure we're gonna die, which took literally 1 second. And when I turned forward again, everything was gone. The area is open enough that nothing would have been able to fly away within 2 seconds and be covered by trees or anything. My coworker and I were still screaming, obviously, and kept asking, "You saw that, right? You saw that?" We told everyone at work and they all laughed at us, because sure, it sounded pretty wild, until someone casually reminded us that West Point is like 10 miles away, which could mean a few things, but one for sure. We saw something we were definitely not supposed to. So what do we think? UFO? Secret military technology they were testing over an unassuming campground? And they would have gotten away with it if it weren't for us meddling camp counselors in our red minivan. Hope you enjoyed reading, and much love, Mary.
That makes sense. There's technology like you to make it reflective so you can't see. There, that would make sense that you would have the technology that would reflect in a way that maybe would bounce a different way off of a cell phone
camera. Couldn't be picked up on camera. I definitely think the government has planes like that. And if West Point is 10 miles away, I think that's a pretty logical conclusion.
There's all kinds of stuff up there. That's Montauk, West Point. There's all in that neck of the woods. Not right next to each other, but all generally up there. And flying distance, spitting distance, well, you know, plane-wise.
When you're flying a UFO, it takes like 2 seconds. So
that's what it sounds like.
Just a skip, and a jump over to the next one.
It sounds exactly like the Tic Tacs that we talked about in the unidentified aerial phenomena, where it's literally, it's not, and it flies away. It's like, boop, and
yeah,
it's just gone.
It's just gone. It's like super speed, the light speed. Yeah.
Type of acceleration.
There's a lot of forest up there, a lot of just big, vast land. And you know what that means.
Test off-road robots. They're testing.
Bigfoot. All sorts of shit goes on up there. Sorry, you get to live in a concrete jungle like we do, where there's nothing around except
shit
just
around.
Cement and, yeah, no trees, nothing.
We'd see it. We'd hear it. Yeah, it's I want to now see, that's the disaster movie I want to see, is the Sasquatch versus the Boston Dynamics robots that won't die.
Damn.
My money's on Sasquatch.
Tell you what, it will be way better than The Man Who Killed Hitler and then also Bigfoot or whatever it was that we watched, which was an abomination. Sam Elliott, I'm so sorry.
We still have to watch the Sasquatch, the gripping docudrama about a group of scientists that set out in the woods to try to find Bigfoot that Sarah gave me, my college classmate, because our college professor's in this. So
we might have to do a Hallmark After Dark type special on Patreon with that one.
I think that's the answer. Well, yeah. Well, was it a UFO? Was it a military plane? Why not both? Maybe we're working with them
In
the skies.
Government aliens is what our conclusion is. Yep.
The Alien Alliance.
Sinisterhood will be right back. I have a very hard time doing nothing. Like, even my relaxing has an agenda, but every once in a while, I really try to focus and let myself just be, whether it's watching a movie, going to an art exhibit, sitting with my best friend, or just a slow evening where I'm just creating just to create and not to even show anybody. And choosing to experience something rather than just getting through it, you know what? IndiCloud makes that a lot easier. IndiCloud is your fully legal online cannabis dispensary. That's gummies, exotic flower, premium pre-rolls, and now zero sugar THC sodas, which basically tastes like someone finally invented a beverage that understands you. All hemp THC, DEA certified, lab tested, shipped discreetly, which is great because I don't need nobody knowing what I'm getting in my packages. That's not anybody's business but mine. It's gummies for when confidence outpaces reality. THC sodas for social plans that sounded great at the time, but now I'm trying to get through them your own way. Premium pre-rolls for those intentional evenings I'm talking about, and $70 ounces because being relaxed should not feel irresponsible. I love an IndiCloud gummy before I'm going to a museum exhibit, before I'm going to a concert, if I'm going to a vintage movie at the theater. It's perfect for date night, for Friday nights, for just locking in and being with yourself. If you're 21 or older, you can get 35% off the entire month at IndiCloud.co. Yes, that's .co. We're keeping it interesting when you use code CREEPY at checkout. That's IndiCloud.co, code CREEPY, 35% off all month long, shipped discreetly to your door, and make sure you fill out the quick survey when you order to support the show. Enjoy responsibly, and a major thank you to IndiCloud for supporting this show and keeping the laughs within reach.
This next one is from Sarah, and it's called The Day I Accidentally Stopped My Kidnapping. Hi, gals. You may remember me from the last Freaky Friday I sent in about accidentally stopping a bank robbery. Well, it turns out I might be at it again. It's possible I thwarted my own kidnapping. Short side story. On the day this incident happened, an extremely rude customer had come into my place of work right before closing and decided to needlessly draw out his transaction time for nearly half an hour. This royally pissed me off, considering I had plans that evening and wasn't expecting to have to stay at work later than usual. Once that asshole finally left and we were able to get things closed up, I started my journey home, raging to myself about having to stay late. I live in a densely populated area, and it's pretty common for traffic to back up at certain exits, especially at rush hour. I was two exits away from the one I needed to get off on when traffic slowed down and I felt the thunk. I'd been rear-ended. I looked to my right to see the car that hit me had sort of sideswiped me as well, putting my passenger side window and the other guy's driver's side window together. I rolled my window down and asked him to pull over. I wanted him to go first so that I could see his plates. He gave me a bewildered look and gestured for me to go first. His passenger yelled to me, "He gets nervous about the traffic. Just pull off to the shoulder." And my gut immediately told me that things were not going to go well. I pulled over, got out, and dialed the police. To my surprise, the offending driver actually pulled over. The two men walked over to me as I was told by the dispatcher that the police in my city no longer go to the scene of minor accidents, and as long as no one was hurt, we could, quote, let insurance sort it out. Now remember, I've been seething since leaving work late, and at this point, my give-a-damn is fully busted. So I frustratedly said, "Cool, well, thanks for fucking nothing," and looked to the men from the other car and said, "I need to see your driver's license and insurance information now." The driver told me it was in his car and then he needed to go back and get it. He then got back in the car and drove off, leaving his passenger with me on the side of the interstate. As I'm muttering each and every swear word I know and trying to take a photo of this asshole's plates, his buddy kept saying, "Don't worry, it's okay. Like I said, he's just nervous about the traffic. He's down at the bottom of the exit ramp." I looked at him like he had two heads and said, "Like hell he is. He's very obviously fleeing the scene of this accident." "No, no, no," he assured me. "Here, let me let you take a picture of my license so you know who I am," he said. He took his license out and let me take a photo of it, then continued, "Yeah, he's a good guy. He's just down at the bottom of the exit ramp. If you'll let me hop in, we can go down there to him." As he casually reached for my passenger door as if he was going to get into my car, I said, "What the fuck do you think you're doing? Get away from my fucking car." He then acted like he was offended, saying, "Whoa, whoa, whoa. I showed you my license as an act of good faith. I know my buddy's down there. I'm trying to help you." I said, "I don't give two shits about you or your buddy. Touch my fucking car again and you'll regret it. I have a weapon and I'm not afraid to pull it out." This was a bluff. I've never touched a gun in my life and only had some pepper spray that I hadn't even ever tested, but he didn't know that. After he considered the threat and the palpable rage emanating from every pore of my body, he backed up a couple steps and put his hands up. I ran to get back into my car and sped off down the exit ramp, just in case, but no sign of the car that hit me. The next day, I told all my coworkers what happened and how ridiculous the situation was. Everyone was so perplexed about the stranded passenger and both of the men's sketchy-ass behavior, commenting on how wild the story was. The next bit gets a little he said, she said, but one of my employees actually told her best friend about the situation. Turns out the best friend then told her husband, who is friends with several police officers from a neighboring county. These officers told him to tell her, to tell my employee, to tell me, sorry, I know that was a lot, that what happened to me is sometimes used as a kidnapping or human trafficking tactic. Essentially, two people will bump into a car driven by a single female, just enough to make her need to pull over. The second car will pull in behind her. One person will make an excuse to leave, and the other will ask the woman to drive them to a second location to meet back up with the other driver and exchange insurance information. If she complies, well, I assume nothing good happens afterwards. It isn't super common, and I was only able to find a few records of kidnapping cases related to hit and runs, but I was definitely shaken after hearing that I may have been targeted. Last time, my obliviousness saved me from a robbery. And this time, it was good old-fashioned female rage that saved me from a potential kidnapping. My friend Amy, another longtime listener of you ladies, recommended sending the story in, so that hopefully you can all share it as a warning. Stay safe in this wild and crazy world, ladies.
Well, that definitely sounds like some type of scam.
Yeah.
If you usually go to, like, what is the most often happening thing here is not going to be like a widespread trafficking scheme. They're probably just going to like hold you up and like steal your money.
Yeah, steal your car.
Or sexually assault you. Yeah.
Rob you. Yeah.
Yeah. It might not
be
that.
Good.
No, it's never like, but it's not like that he was just a nice guy that needed a ride. But all that, it's so funny that you think about, like, I was so mad at that customer that made me stay late. But also that customer that made you stay late got you fired the fuck up.
Mm-hmm.
So then when this shit happened, it's the burnt toast thing, right? Where you're like, damn, I was pissed at that guy. But like, also shout out to that guy. You pissed me off so bad that I might have clawed this person's eyes out and I needed
yep.
that oomph within me. So thank you. Also,
but
yeah.
also if he hadn't taken his time,
yeah,
she would have been home earlier and never had to get hit in the first place.
That's true.
So you know, there's two sides to it, but at least he did work you up enough to where you were like, not today, motherfucker.
No,
but this is so freaky. As soon as he drives off and I'm there with the guy, I'm like, nope, this isn't going to end well for
yes.
sure. And then you get back on with the police and say, no, you do need to send somebody out because some weird sus shit is happening.
Right. It's not a minor accident. This is some sort of a weird scam operation at the very least. But I do appreciate that you reacted as viscerally as you did when he went to reach for the handle of your car. That's so presumptuous.
That's part of the scam, too.
Oh, like, certainly.
Well, if I'm already doing it, you know, they're not going to say no because they don't want to be rude and
yes,
stuff.
Yes.
No.
So I was about to say is, like, as you all listen, gentlemen, this is what a thing that is used to control women is to be like, can't you just be more polite? I'm just trying to help you. And I will say, as a woman, I don't fucking have to do any fucking thing. And neither do you. Like, as you listen to this, be like Sarah and just say, no, give me your insurance. I am being, I was trying to show you good faith. And you are trying to manipulate me. Fuck you. I can hear you right now. And you give me your information. Let's get the fuck out of here. I'm not engaging in whatever this little scheme is here.
It's probably also a fake license. So,
right?
Like, what was the point of that? You know, it is like a fake act of good faith mm-hmm. to try and win you over. And then, you know, you saw the car wasn't down there. So when he gets in the car, what does he do? Pull out a weapon and then mm-hmm. forces you to drive to a second location where maybe that guy is waiting, and then something terrible does happen.
It absolutely does. I keep my pepper gel that also has a UV stain in my center console of my car, because I'm like, what if someone comes up to my window and tries to get in my window? I could crack it and spray him in the face. And or I keep a tire thumper in the back seat that's like a stick that's about it's about 2 feet long and has a metal ball bearing in the end of it. So it gives you a good thwack to test the air pressure in your tires is why I have it.
Oh,
it tests the air pressure in
you
your tires.
You got to test the air pressure. I mean, good. You'd be stupid to not have something that tests the air pressure.
Yes, and they say truckers use it to test the tires on 18-wheelers. So it tests tires really good. Mm-hmm. So I call it my whacking stick. So I got a whacking stick in my gel pepper spray because I go and park in forest preserve parking lots. It's, you know, when I'm by myself. So I try to stay strapped without being gun strapped
without being strapped.
Yeah.
Well, I agree. Stay safe in this wild and crazy world, ladies. Mm-hmm.
Sinisterhood will be right back. This episode is brought to you by IQ Bar, our exclusive snack, hydration, and coffee sponsor. IQ Bar protein bars, IQ Mix hydration mixes, and IQ Joe mushroom coffees are the delicious, low sugar, brain and body fuel you need to win your day. If you want to try everything IQ Bar makes, the ultimate sampler pack is the way to go. It includes 9 IQ bars, 8 IQ mix sticks, and 4 IQ Joe sticks. All of their products are gluten-free, dairy-free, soy-free, and made without GMOs or artificial sweeteners. The bars are packed with clean plant protein, fiber, and brain-boosting ingredients like magnesium, lion's mane, and adaptogens. IQ Mix helps with hydration and focus, while IQ Joe delivers smooth, jitter-free energy with 200 milligrams of natural caffeine in flavors better than any drip coffee. With over 20,000 five-star reviews and counting, more people than ever are fueling their busy lifestyles with IQ bars, brain and body boosting bars, hydration mixes, and mushroom coffees. Their ultimate sampler pack includes all 3. You start your day with the IQ Joe. You got the bars in your bag in case you get hungry on the go. I like to keep a bar in my bike bag whenever I go on long bike rides. I also keep the IQ Mix. I love the raspberry lemonade, probably my favorite. I also love the passion fruit, blood orange. There's so many good flavors, but those are my lifesavers when I go on a long run. I feel like they hit the spot in a way that water doesn't. And right now, IQ Bar is offering our special podcast listeners 20% off all IQ Bar products, including the ultimate sampler pack, plus free shipping. To get your 20% off, text creepy to 64,000. Text creepy to 64,000. That's creepy to 64,000. Message and data rates may apply. See terms for details.
Well, this next one ties in with the episode that we re-released this week. This is from Casey and is called An Unexpected Shower Guest at the Brown Palace Hotel. Hey ladies, how you been? Last time I wrote in, I told y'all about my possessed grandma in Something's Got a Hold on Grandma in Freaky Friday 82. That was forever ago, but I still remember listening to you read it for Freaky Friday while working at this small family deli. Let's just say some heard me hoot, others heard me holler, and most just heard a ruckus. Needless to say, I was thrilled. Before we get to the story, I just gotta say, you ladies have really helped me get through some of the worst years of my life and are currently with me through one of the best. This year I converted to Islam, married the love of my life, and moved cities. Y'all have been the soundtrack to all of my endeavors. Your banter, wheezing laughter, enthusiasm for the weird, and love for each other has made such a difference. I know I'm speaking for the entire Sinisterhood community when I say we're all so grateful for you macabre mamas, which
hell
has
yeah.
to be the, it's not margarita mamas anymore, it's macabre mamas now.
You wear the witch hat too.
Oh yeah. Anyways, on to the story. So in Something's Got a Hold on Grandma, I think I mentioned that my father was a paranormal investigator. He stopped doing formal investigations with his group when I was a kid. But once my sister Harmony and I were old enough, we did investigations with him. We would go on, quote, paranormal vacations for our investigations. To make sure all experiences were genuine, my dad would never tell us where we were going or where we were staying. He would literally just say the state we were going to. This time he said, girls, we're going to Colorado. My dad had 3 haunted locations planned for this trip, the first being the Brown Palace in Denver.
It was every bit as gorgeous as you said. Everything was so classic, I was in love. Looking over the railings on each floor made you feel like royalty looking over a balcony. My sister and I were so excited. We had never been somewhere so nice. Harm and I shared a room on the fourth floor, and our dad had a room a few doors down from us. The idea was to basically explore Denver during the day, and at night, see if anything happened. Ask who was there. Capture some EVPs. Typical ghosty things. For whatever reason, it never crossed my mind that something might happen during the day. At least, not here. In the mid-afternoon, on our second day in Denver, my dad and sister wanted to take a nap. We'd been going nonstop, and since nothing had happened paranormally the first night, it was agreed we would all rest up for the evening ahead. I've never been one to take a nap. It's always been hard for me to sleep during the day, so I took this opportunity to take a nice hot shower. As my sister slept, I laid my beautifully flowy black dress for the evening out on my side of the king-size bed, gathered my shower supplies from my suitcase, and made my way over to what was going to be my personal chamber of steamy oasis. The bathroom was huge. It had a massive tub, and next to the tub was a huge walk-in shower surrounded by glass panels. The shower head was positioned in the left half of the shower, and to the right was a ledge that was wide enough to sit with ample room to put all my shower stuff. Just to clarify, I never sat down on that ledge. I was also the first person to use this shower since we got this room. I cranked on the shower. Once the water heated to a degree fit for the devil, I was under it and in heaven. Surprisingly, even in June, Denver was cold. It felt more like early spring than the beginning of summer, so it was nice to finally be able to warm up. Steam collected on the glass, and you could hardly see through it. I lathered my hair, rinsed it, and as I wiped the water from my eyes, I noticed it. There, on the glass surrounding the ledge, was the impression of someone sitting. It looked like their back was pressed against the glass behind the ledge, and their left arm and leg pressed against the glass next to the door. I froze. I was covered in goosebumps and had a sinking feeling in my gut. This was a really weird position to be in with a ghost. In all honesty, I turned around and ignored it because it's better to pretend it's not there than to acknowledge it, right? Maybe it was a poorly cleaned part of the shower. Maybe I'm just freaking myself out. I really tried to rationalize this, but I still felt like someone was watching me. I finished my shower, and when I turned around to leave out the shower door, it was still there. But it looked like it had moved, the same way the glass streaks when you drag your hand across a steamy mirror. I practically ran out of there, dried off with lightning speed, threw on a towel, and sped down the hallway, all the while trying to holler at my sister, who was impossible to wake, to get up because we're going to Dad's room. Her snoring never ceased, and she didn't budge. As I passed by the wall at the entrance to the bedroom, I stopped dead in my tracks. Next to my side of the bed, there was an office table with a stationary chair on the right and an office chair with wheels on the left. I watched the office chair slowly roll itself away from the table, then it turned to face me. Ladies, I swear on everything, the room got so cold. I snatched my dress from the bed, shook my sister awake, and threw it on as we ran down the hallway to the door, snatched my purse, and we bolted to Dad's room. Dad begrudgingly opened the door, and I explained to him what had happened. Harmony and I were both pretty freaked out. He said, "Well, let's go take a look at it." He checked out our room. The chair was still facing where I had been standing, but the impression on the glass was gone. However, the room still felt like we weren't alone. We decided to leave and grab a bite in the city to get out of the hotel for a while and get our minds on something other than ghosts. A couple days later, as we were on our way to our next haunted location, it ended up being the Stanley, my dad said he believed us. Apparently, the night before, he had his own brief encounter. He had set my sister and I up for an hour or two for our first ever spa experience in the basement of the hotel. It was great. Highly recommend. As we were getting our spa on, he headed to his room for some alone time, aka to probably get stoned with his pen and watch some TV. It was only him and one other man in the elevator when they began to hear children laughing and playing really loud on the floor above them that they were supposed to get off on. Dad said he and the man exchanged a glance of, oh, great, loud-ass kids on our floor. As the elevator settled, Dad said it sounded like those kids were literally right outside the door. But when the doors opened, it suddenly became silent. He and the man looked at each other, wide-eyed, but the guy just shrugged and got off. Dad decided to go back down to the first floor and have a beer instead. The story freaked us out. I have chills just thinking about what it would have been like to experience that. Though they were spooky times, I'm so grateful for each of the otherworldly experiences we were able to share together. Dad's death anniversary slash birthday was this past August. It's been 3 years since he passed, and we miss him every day. My sister and I will always cherish him in his search for the unknown. I hope he got all the answers to his questions when he crossed over. He still stops in from time to time just to check in. Thank you, ladies, for reading my story and giving each of us a space to talk about the things that get us crazy looks from the general public. I hope you enjoyed reading about our stay at the Brown Palace. Maybe next time I'll write in about our experiences at the Hawthorne Hotel in Salem. Keep on creeping on. I can't wait to hear what else you guys cover. Stay safe, stay spooky, and keep it creepy. Much love, Casey. P.S. I attached some pictures below. The last photo my dad, sister, and I took together. The menu we framed from the Brown Palace, a photo of my husband and I, plus bonus photos of my sweet puppy, Teduardo, in his formal spooky attire.
Teduardo is very dapper looking in this.
Teduardo will do tricks for treats, according to the bandana he's wearing.
Nice. And that Brown Palace logo, I recognize that. Absolutely. And you and your husband are very cute together. What else? You're right. Saying the Casey described it well, like you're a royalty looking over the balcony.
Oh,
it is such
it's
a grand place.
It is. It is.
So
and
grand.
If you're confused because Casey said, I ran down the hallway to the bed. No, no, that is correct.
No.
If you remember, there's the door to enter the hotel room, and there's literally an 8-foot hallway until you get to where the bed was. And we all commented on it as well.
We're like, okay.
Because it'd be like, hold on, it takes a minute to get to the door when somebody knocks.
Yeah, they're like, room service, and you're like, I'm in here, I promise. They're probably
I'll be there.
Yeah, by now. But I feel like, too, with like the elevators, because it is like, if you've not been to the Brown Palace, and I mean, we somewhat described it in the show, but from her dad's perspective, when the elevator doors open and you step out, you can pretty much see, it's not like a standard hotel where there's hallways because of the atrium in the middle. Mm-hmm. You really can see like the whole floor. So if her dad heard a passel of laughing kids and you got off, you would, and also you could kind of like duck your head out and almost look up and be like, oh, were the kids up there? Mm-hmm. So the fact that it was immediately quiet when the doors opened is aberrant. Like that is strange because it's like that area, especially because we were there during the champagne cascade, was fucking loud. Like there was a lot of people.
Oh yeah.
So
which also was awesome. If
dude,
you're there
so
at Christmas time, check it out. We wanted to go to that spa. It was recommended ad nauseum by everybody that it was like such an amazing spa. So I'm so glad you got to go to it.
Hell yeah. No, and we did not get to go to High Tea, but I would love to go to High Tea at any time there.
No, but
like
isn't that where
place.
The steak place was?
It's called like, not like the sailboat. I'm sure we talked about
the
in the episode. Ship shape or whatever it is. It's so good.
Ships in or something?
Something like that. It's
with
so
that
good.
Biggest steak I've ever had.
I've been
with
fucking
that
with meat
potato
recently.
And all the dressings.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that was good. We also went to a really fun escape room there. That was a fun
that was a
trip.
That was a really good trip. Also, the Stanley, I was like, damn, we got to go back. We need to go back to Stanley.
I think they've redone it some since we've been there, too.
We definitely need to. We'll do a redo on it. We'll do a whole different Stanley.
Oh,
we need to bring Nelson. Bring the crew out. Meet us in Denver. Let's do it.
Dude, I've been trying to get to Denver. You know we're trying to get to Denver always.
We always want to get to Denver.
Casa Bonita. Well, maybe we have a trip coming up.
Let's do it, man. That's the next one, especially like weather-wise. Like I'm trying to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
90 degrees. I'm dying, dude. I'm dying. Don't let this hoodie fool you. It's just because the air conditioner's cranking. Well, thank you, Casey.
You've
re-inspired us to go to Denver.
Yes, and congratulations on all your wonderful life changes.
Yeah.
And thank you for the kind words and allowing us to be in your ears during all these things. That goes for everybody.
Definitely. And thanks for sharing your daddy with us. I hope, yes. Hope he makes his presence known, and he's definitely proud of you carrying on his spooky legacy.
Oh, yes.
Sinisterhood, we'll be right back.
The final one is from Caroline. And the subject line is, that one time I was punched in the face by a murderer. Hey, y'all. Caroline here from South Louisiana. I would like to tell you about the one time I was punched in the face by a murderer. Back in my college days, there was a local bar that served underage folks. Naturally, my friends and I drank there from ages 18 to 21. My roommate and I were there almost 5 nights a week. Needless to say, I was comfortable. One night in 2010, after I had just turned 20 years old, I decided to leave early. I didn't think twice about walking to my car alone. After all, I parked just right across the street. As I started my short walk, I dialed up my boyfriend at the time to keep me company. Side note, do y'all remember when that is what they advised us ladies to do when walking alone so we looked busy? Garbage advice. I noticed two men standing outside the car parked behind me, but I thought nothing of it. As I went to open my door, I realized the larger man was approaching me, but it was too late. He punched me in the face and somehow snatched my sling purse right off of me. I went down, but I didn't go out. I fell to the ground, and with my face covered in blood, the only thing I could think to shout was, "What the fuck? What the fuck is happening?" I'll never forget this moment, lying in the middle of the street with my face covered in blood and a man standing over me, fearing for my life and not knowing what he was going to do next. My assailant threw my cell phone at me and then hopped in a car and disappeared. I stumbled my way to the back door of the bar and into the arms of unsuspecting patrons. I had two black eyes for weeks, and one of them was completely swollen shut. After I was attacked, I never sought help. Mental health awareness wasn't really a thing people talked about at the time. I looked at it as an event that happened to me, and I never thought about it again, never once realizing that my anxiety, depression, and trust issues that followed had anything to do with this. It was too scary and painful to think about, so I just didn't. I didn't hear anything until over 5 years later. To make an incredibly long story short, it turns out my assailant had actually murdered a man only hours before he attacked me. He robbed a pizza delivery man and stabbed him to death. They were able to put together the surveillance videos of him leaving the murder scene and then seeing him in the same car at the Circle K where he used my debit card. I ended up testifying as a witness in 2017, where he was sentenced to life without parole. After testifying, I thought it was all over. But thanks to a new Louisiana law, he's going to have a new sentencing since the vote was not unanimous, 10-2. So I've been subpoenaed twice recently, but court keeps getting rescheduled. I continue to await another subpoena to testify yet again. As a 30-something-year-old, I'm just now going to therapy and unboxing all of my victim blaming and survivor's guilt. I don't share this story very often, and not many folks know this about me. I wanted to reach out to y'all in particular, though. Not only am I a top-tier patron, humble brag, and love your content, but because you have inadvertently helped me on my journey of healing. Heather, you once told a story you used to tell your clients who fell victim to fraud. Fraud victims often blame themselves for falling for it, but you said that's not their fault because the snake's going to bite regardless of who's walking by. It's not your fault for getting bit. It's the snake's fault for being a snake or something like that. When I first listened to this, I literally broke down into tears. I still blame myself for walking alone, and it's difficult to switch mindsets from victim to survivor. But then I remember what Heather said, and I feel renewed. I have the right to walk by myself at night. I wasn't doing anything wrong. I just got bit by a snake. Thank you for the work you do and for reminding former victims, now survivors, that it's not our fault. I've incorporated Heather's analogy into my affirmations, and it's helping me reframe my trauma. Isn't it funny how one story can completely help someone see a different view? P.S. Shout out to my sister Catherine and my therapist Holly for always being there for me.
Oof. Yeah, you definitely did nothing wrong. We've, like the very first story, we've all done that a million times. The people that did something wrong was the bar that served underage kids and, of course, the assailant. And I say that about the bar. We had places that served us as underage, but looking back now as an adult, it's incredibly irresponsible. And if something like this happens, you can easily be held liable and you lose your liquor license.
I don't know when the law changed, but I believe when I lived in Louisiana in 2007, it may have either just changed or was about to. You could drink at age 18 with a college ID at some bars. Yeah. So it might have been like the very final years of that or months of that. But I do remember there was, I did not need a fake ID for some places, but other places I did. It might have been that it had just changed.
Well,
not,
this is 2010.
Yeah. So, I, by this time, I think it was, they were
God,
just letting people in.
That's, I don't know. I don't even know. 18, 21, who knows? It's all weird.
To be that young and that, you know, consuming that much.
Yeah. And, I mean, yeah. Alcohol in general is weird to me that it's a legal thing.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm not saying it shouldn't be. I'm not saying we got to go back to prohibition, but it's just, it always makes me be like, I can't believe we're just are bringing people drinks at these bars. And then we're like, all right, see y'all later. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.
Yeah, it's definitely, that's why it's heavily regulated. Mm-hmm. As for his case being thrown out and new trial was vacated, there was a Supreme Court case called Ramos versus Louisiana that ruled that the Sixth Amendment requires guilty verdicts for criminal trials to be unanimous. So if the assailant in this case was convicted on a 10-2 vote, then Louisiana actually passed a constitutional amendment. So the Sixth Amendment says you get a trial and any rules on trials is left up to the states. But this Supreme Court case recently said it does have to be unanimous. And so Louisiana, in connection, it was actually right before this case came out in the Supreme Court, Louisiana passed their own constitutional amendment and he was able to appeal. I looked up his appeal she sent me. Initially, he tried to appeal on some errors saying, you know, they shouldn't have allowed Caroline's testimony in about the punching. He had attacked two or three other people. Those folks were allowed to testify. And it, the defendant's argument was, oh, you're letting all this information in about me punching these women and stealing their purses just to prove I'm a bad person. And the prosecution said, no, it actually helps establish a timeline that mm-hmm. you hit this woman, you stole her debit card, and you're now in the same car that was seen leaving the victim that he stabbed the pizza delivery guy. We saw you later that night in the same car, same outfit, mm-hmm. you know. So it was actually
it all.
I imagine the jury probably thought, well, you know, they didn't feel too bad whenever they convicted him. I don't know what the two holdouts were, but it sounds like now because of this Supreme Court case and the Louisiana constitutional amendment, Caroline, you will likely have to testify again because he gets a new trial is what I found when I looked up his second appeal, the one that wasn't based on any errors, but was simply based on, hey, the Supreme Court said everybody gets everybody deserves a unanimous verdict. I didn't get one. I get a do-over. And the Third Circuit Court of Appeal said, we agree.
Well, Caroline, I'm sure that's not something you're looking forward to. Like anyone, when they have to do this, you kind of worry about getting re-victimized all over again and having to just dredge it up and go through it all. But I think you're doing the right thing by going to counseling and reframing the trauma. And I'm so glad that Heather's advice helped you with that and your sister and your therapist and everything. I'm glad you have a really good support group because that's horrifying. And I have walked by myself to my car in areas both that I think were fine and both that I shouldn't. I'm like, yeah, this probably isn't the best place for me to be walking all the time. We all do it all the time. You did nothing wrong. So I'm glad that you're now able to start seeing that. So thank you so much for sending that in because just like Heather's words helped you, I imagine that your words and your story and being vulnerable and willing to share that will help others as well. We hear a lot from Freaky Friday stuff, people emailing in, oh, I just heard this and it reminded me of this story. So I think a lot of times we like suppress stuff mm-hmm. and it doesn't even track as this was fucked up until we hear it happens to someone else and then it kind of unlocks a memory.
And I think too, we're kind of all, well, no one wants to hear that. It's just a story mm-hmm. that happened to me. Well, we want to hear it, and we're happy mm-hmm. to share it. And especially if writing it out helps you, if getting that connection that maybe other people have gone through something similar, if that helps you as well. I mean, that's why we like to do this, is because we like to hear people's stories and also then share those. And I think, Caroline, as exactly what Christy said, you're doing the right thing, finding, reframing it and finding healing. And I will reiterate, you did nothing wrong. The amount of times I walked in New Orleans by myself to and from bars and places, the times I walked around Chicago, Dallas, et cetera. So I am, I'm not immune from doing that. And it's one of those, like, there's sometimes you go for a jog and you get stung by a wasp, and sometimes you don't, and you're not asking for it when you do. It's just a victim of circumstance. So if you can muster the strength to testify, I think your testimony is relevant, impactful, important, and will hopefully help the pizza delivery gentleman, you know, his family. Now, I'm sure that's such upheaval that they thought they had this closure, that this happened to them, and now because of a sort of, you know, and we want that,
they're
right?
They're re-victimized too.
You're all re-victimized, and we do want that, right? You want to be sure. The argument against the unanimous, non-unanimous vote from a jury was, you know, it's a relic of more racialized times, where if you had a majority white jury, with, especially in the Deep South, and you had a black defendant and you had only one or two black jurors, it was kind of like, well, tough majority rules. And so there's something to be said about the unanimity. I will say, reviewing the appeals document you sent, I think that the prosecution has an airtight case. I think they basically just need to follow the same blueprint that they did before. And that includes the importance of your and the other living victim survivor's testimony. And like, I love that you framed it from former victim, now survivor. And so having the survivors kind of band together and go, you're not getting off that easy, sir. We're coming.
Yeah.
So
for sure.
Good for you.
Sinisterhood, we'll be right back. Well, this next one is from Christy, Christy with a K and a Y. The subject line is, I accidentally cleaned a crime scene. This story takes place in 2007 or 2008 when I was still in high school. It's both true crime and a little bit spooky. I lived in a small city in northern Canada that was made somewhat famous by the show Ice Road Truckers. Being a broke student that I was, I had multiple part-time jobs to make money. Hair dye isn't cheap. My then-boyfriend, now husband's family, owns a few properties and businesses, and they would pay me good money to clean up the offices on a regular basis. One week, I'm told there was a leak at a house downtown, and I was asked to go clean it up. This house was a creepy, single-family house that was turned into an office for a business upstairs and had a one-bedroom rental suite downstairs. I arrived to find out that the downstairs had been leaking, and there was water and some mold in the basement in the unoccupied suite downstairs. I go to the worst part and start cleaning up, mopping puddles of water and tidying up. I then proceed to the small suite. Immediately, when I entered, I felt off and felt a weird energy. But being young and broke, I started to clean up the floor. I noticed that the small apartment, maybe 400 square feet, was coated in a thick layer of dust, but there were things all over the place. Cutlery and dinnerware on the counters, magazines on the small table, a dirty coffee mug in the sink, and on the bed was an old brown suitcase covered in a thick layer of dirt. Clothes were tossed haphazardly into the bag, and the dresser drawers were open. It looked like someone had suddenly and unexpectedly left and hadn't returned for a long time. When I finished my job, I talked to my boyfriend and asked what was up with that apartment. He told me that the previous tenant had been murdered, and it hadn't been rented since. The story goes that the man who rented the apartment was from out of town and was part of the drug trade. An important note is that at the time, the city's drug trade was typically run by one gang at a time from down south, but there were occasional conflicts. Anyway, one night, two men from an opposing drug gang came to the house and beat him in the apartment. He was dragged to the garage and murdered. Later, they tried to burn the body at the nearby river and were immediately caught. Both men were convicted of the crime. After the police did their investigation, the apartment was shut and never rented again. The energy in that space was suffocating, and I truly believe I felt something there I cannot explain. I had to go down a couple more times to other areas of the basement, which felt fine. It was only when I went into the room where it happened and the victim's belongings were left that it felt this way. I don't know if his spirit remained in the space or if it was just the energy from the awful events that took place there, but it was truly unnerving. The house and garage have since been torn down, and I think that's probably for the better. Thanks for all you do. I'm a psychologist and love listening to the podcast on my long drive home. P.S. Please come to Western Canada.
That's, you got to give somebody a heads up when you're going in to clean up something like that. Even if, you know, you hear crime scene, you think, oh, there's going to be, you know, gore everywhere. Not necessarily, but I still feel like you got to get a heads up when you're walking into a space like that.
Yeah, even if you don't really believe in any of that, you don't believe in energy or spirits or whatever, I think for anybody, especially a young person that's being sent there by themselves into the depths of the basement, like you might encounter something disturbing, and that is a untouched snapshot of what this person's life was like in their final moments. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, here's a broom. Good luck.
It's really sad to think that all of those things were his last moments. Like when you see video or footage of like Chernobyl and stuff, how people just, it was like, you're just living your life and boom, everything stops. So it looks as if somebody was just like abducted right from the spot.
Mm-hmm. It's eerie, that frozen moment in time. I can't recall what I was watching. It might have been on the History Channel, but it might have been something we researched for last year's tour anyway, but it was a closed off room in a house. And when they opened it up, it was everything in the room was, it hadn't been touched since like 1929. And it was down to like papers on the desk. There was fuzz. I can't remember what that was about, but anyhow, stuff like that's always very eerie, almost like a, you know, it's like not a museum because a museum has been curated and placed there. It's like a moment in time. Mm-hmm. And I think that might be that energy feeling that you have, is that if you are taken, you know, abruptly, you know, murdered where you didn't expect it, that part of your energy may be like, oh wait, no, I was in the middle of something, you know, I was packing my bag, I was whatever. And so it might not be fully his spirit there, but I would venture a guess, especially given what you felt, Christy, that some energy remained in that room, that heavy.
And museums, it's a place where a lot of people go. This is a person's private home. So when you come upon or like that hidden room, a place that others that didn't live there didn't intend for you to see, you kind of feel like, you know, a voyeur in a wrong way. Like you shouldn't be there. Like you're intruding on someone's personal life.
Yeah. And I've had friends who were in similar situations where they worked as probate attorneys or they were settling people's estates and had to go into different homes of people who had passed away. And you really, and it sounds like, you know, Christy's like, I did what I needed to do and leave. But it takes a sense of reverence really for the place that you're in. And like, I feel like telling the energy of like, I'm here to clean. I'm not, you know, I'm sorry for what happened to you. And that skeptical people in my life, you know, practicing attorneys and stuff, have had experiences of like feeling a heaviness or a sadness. And then they're told later by family members, oh, this is the room where this happened or this event happened here or whatever. So I do think that places take on an emotion. That
energy can't be destroyed.
That's right. And that energy is hanging around. But that is a brave thing to go and clean that, especially when you did not know what you were walking into.
That's a brave thing just kind of in general, especially when you're young and by yourself to go to places, you know, who knows what was going on there before. So good for you. I'm glad that nothing other than negative energy happened.
Yeah, just negative energy and a little bit of sadness for sure. Well, thank you, Christy, with a K and a Y. Sinisterhood, we'll be right back. Well, this last one is from Victor, and the subject line is new cryptid sighting at McKinney Falls State Park.
It's happening. It's happening.
Thank you, Victor. Victory. All right. Victor writes, hello, ladies. My name is Victor, and I love your podcast. I appreciate both the humor and respect involved in your reporting, but one of my main points of affection for you two is that I myself am a Texan, having lived in the Austin area for my entire life. Hell yeah. When I was about 10 or 12 years old, my younger brother had a best friend whose sister was a year younger than me. Thanks to the convenient circumstances, she and I soon became friends as well. And our parents would often arrange for all four of us to play at each other's houses and in various parks. One day, the mother of our friends offered to take all four of us on a short road trip to McKinney Falls State Park. Incredibly excited for swimming, snacks, and general preteen fun, we excitedly agreed and piled into the car. For those who don't know, McKinney Falls is a state park only about 20 or 30 minutes from Austin, with waterfalls, swimming holes, and a classic Texas landscape. It's a great place to take hyper kids, and the four of us had a lot of fun, especially since there were few people there besides us. Eventually, we had gotten around to jumping off the tall rocks overlooking the swimming holes and into the water, developing the perfect trail through the woods to get back up to our jumping spot. We were doing this on loop, jumping into the water and immediately running back through the woods, excitedly to start over again. On this one loop, it was just me and the older sister, jogging across the dusty, rock-strewn trail in our sandals. "Look," she said, "there's a lizard there with its arms poking up out of the rocks." I cringed because I had noticed what she was pointing at, and after an unfortunate encounter at a different lake, I recognized that what she thought were arms were far too thin, and that the creature she saw was likely dead and dried up from the sun. Its body was dark green, and while its torso was still about the thickness of a snake or garden hose, the arms, she indicated, were thinner than even a twig. It was also sticking unnaturally straight up from between two rocks in the trail, not lying down in the natural position of a lizard. I started to say something dismissive to indicate to her that we should keep walking, hoping she wouldn't try to pick the thing up or realize that it wasn't really alive. But before I could finish speaking, one of the most horrifying things I've ever seen began to happen. The creature raised itself up from the rocks, towering up like a growing plant. As it rose, we could see that it was not a lizard with dried-up arms or anything like that, but instead a snake-like creature with a round body and head. Those growths that my friend had thought were arms were more akin to antlers or horns on its head, or maybe the strange antenna of a moth or axolotl, and its snake-like body was nearly a foot long. With a fucking hop, the thing got free from the rocks. While its appearance was freaky and strange, I could have considered it a mutated snake or an undiscovered form of newt. But what made this thing terrify both me and my friend was the way it moved. It was unnatural, a horrifying mix between the slither of a sidewinder snake and a hopping motion. It writhed like this for a frozen moment, moving across the trail. But before it disappeared into the woods, me and my friend both screamed true bloody murder, the most real and horrified scream that's perhaps ever come out of my body, and ran back the way we had come, yelling for our brothers and my friend's mom. When we told the story, no one believed us, dismissing the sight as that of a snake or an animal we didn't know. But I knew they were wrong, and that no animal like that was native to Texas, or even really possible at all. But because of the strangeness of the scenario and the dismissal we received from our families, I very rarely told this story before. Still, though I know what I saw, and I know with conviction the clutching feeling of true evil that went through my body as I looked at that thing and its unnatural movements. I don't know if this is the sort of story you guys are looking for when you suggest cryptids, but I figured if there was any place to share this, it was on a Texan supernatural podcast with hosts as kind as y'all. Thank you for reading, and good luck, Victor.
Of course, this is the place.
You need the luck, Victor. Yeah, you did have some good luck that day.
Right? Yeah, the thing rose like a monster. I was like, man.
Like a phoenix from the ashes.
I'm not dead.
I'm having trouble picturing what this looks like.
Victor, we have a request. Will you draw a sketch of this?
I would love a sketch.
If you send us a sketch, we would really appreciate it. And
we can share it on
our
social media to say, hey, did you listen to Freaky Friday? This is what that thing looked like.
It's like the thing the person saw in the mine. Have you seen this monster? It was our other unknown cryptid. Mm-hmm. So we send us a sketch, Victor. We'll collectively name it. We got to start brainstorming names.
Oh, because. Yes. Victor, if you have any suggestions, we would love to hear what you call it.
Yes.
If you and your friends called it by something, like remember that rock monster?
If it was at McKinney Falls State Park, can I just recommend the McKinney Monster?
Ooh. Personally, do you want a cryptid named after you?
Very desperately.
Okay. Then we can call it the McKinney Monster.
Until if Victor tells us otherwise, I'll respect that as well. But I'm just
throwing
my hat.
That's also what Paris calls you when you're hangry. Yeah,
if the temperature is above 70 degrees and I haven't eaten in 2 hours, I'm the McKinney Monster. I will rise up from my rock and I'm like,
And then you hop and slither away to the thermostat.
Give me a snack and turn the air conditioner down. Well, that is certainly freaky. And it sucks that you go back and you're like, but I get it from like a parent perspective. If you're like, I think I saw an unknown creature in the woods, you can't be like, I bet you did. Let's go out and search for it. You know, it's like, we have to go home. So
I don't know. I'm going into those woods. If Ella comes running out of the woods saying, I just saw something that's never been seen before.
Go for it.
Say, well, get the flashlight. Let's go.
There's only one way to find out is we have to go to McKinney Falls State Park and find
out. I've never been. In fact, I don't even know that I knew this was a thing. So I love a good Texas landscape park with natural watering holes and whatnot.
Oh, yeah. A lot of really great places in the hill country outside of Austin that are like swimming holes that, you know, you pay a couple bucks. Either it's on somebody's private land or they've figured out a way to, you know, let you in. And it's just like natural spring-fed water. And
I love it.
If I get to see a cryptid, too, I'll pay double. Oh, yeah.
What's the one in Austin that's like the big one everybody goes
Barton Springs, Dripping Springs. There's a couple springs.
I've also never been there, and I've always wanted to go.
You've been missing out. Texas is a wide landscape.
Oh, I know. I've been to Austin a million times, but I've never gone for like the lake side of it.
Yeah, the natural beauty.
We
gotta
go to Barton Springs this summer.
And the hill country is beautiful too. Anywhere out of the hill country is beautiful. Well, I think the McKinney Monster lives and is real, Victor. I believe you, certainly. And
I believe you.
We believe in the McKinney Monster.
I'm looking at the McKinney Monster right now, so I 100% believe you.
I just really appreciate that we're getting some more cryptid sightings. Whether they're really animals, that's okay too, but it makes me happy. And I appreciate you, our story connoisseur, for putting them in my wine flight so that I get to say the cryptid
You're
story.
Welcome.
It makes
I
me
know
happy.
You, I was very excited to get this one. Yes. And I knew that you would be very excited to read it. So thank you, Victor, for sharing that with us. We're going to have to go do our own investigation.
And please send us a sketch.
Yes. ASAP. Send us a sketch. If anybody else that sent in a story today wants to send in an accompanying sketch, love it. Please
here
do.
For
We're
it.
Always here for sketches.
Visual
pictures,
aids.
Pictures, visual aids. Yes. Well, thank you so much to everybody who sent in your Freaky Friday stories today. If you have an odd but true story, maybe you've encountered Bigfoot, you've seen a UFO, you had a brush with true crime, or you felt the presence of an otherworldly being, send them in at sinisterhood.com/Freaky Friday. Speaking of freaky, got something creepy caught on camera? Found a weird or unexplainable clip online? Maybe you just have a funny video you want us to see. Send it our way and we'll live react to it during Sunday Scaries, our weekly live stream over on Patreon every Sunday at 8:30 p.m. Central. It's totally free. You just put in your email. You get immediate access to the chat, to the videos, and a whole backlog of free content on our Patreon just for being a free member.
We love it. And if you want to try everything on the top highest tier but not pay for it at all, we have a free trial. It's where you join for a week at any of the tiers, but we always recommend the best tier because that way you get all the perks. You can binge everything, see what's going on in there, and cancel anytime before the trial is over without getting charged. If you do stick around, opt for an annual membership so you get that 1 month free and you get a whole year of so much stuff.
You can stack up the things to where you could really milk it for all it's worth, which is exactly what I would do.
It's called the Milk It Plan on Patreon.
It's the Milk It Plan, yeah. We're going to start a Milk It tier. I mean, there are over 1,000 hours of content on there, like Judge Christie, where I rule on petty grievances you bring before the court, True Crime Headlines, where we break down the latest news and updates in true crime, Heather Saves, where anything Heather has found late night scrolling could be discussed, and Emma the Asshole, Unpopular Opinions, and other subreddits that we feel require our input. And when you sign up for one of those annual memberships and get your month free, you also get ad-free episodes, monthly live stream Q&As, quarterly live bonus content, weekly audio bonus content, minisodes, merch discounts, and a community of the best listeners on the whole internet.
Head over to sinisterhood.com and click shop in the top banner to check out merch like t-shirts, mugs, totes, stickers, and even clothes for your kiddos. Check the pin post on Patreon to get your Patreon merch discount.
And while you're on our website, you can review the show, submit topics and cases you'd like us to cover, submit your Freaky Friday stories. You'll also find fun things like topic-based playlists and tickets and information for Crime Wave at Sea 2027.
We cannot wait. Go over. Yeah, get your cabin now because they are going to sell out. It's so many more creators this year that they're selling fast. We keep getting updates and we keep being like, got to make sure we got spots for y'all, but we can't guarantee them. So you got to book them now. Go to crimewaveatsea.com/sinister or go to our website and click on live shows. And there's tons of information there. Follow us over on Instagram and Threads at Sinisterhood Pod. Like us on Facebook at Sinisterhood. Follow us over on YouTube and TikTok at Sinisterhood Podcast to watch clips from the episodes, live streams, and more. And if you're looking for a unique and personal gift for the Sinisterhood fan in your life, or you just want to treat yourself to a pep talk, book a cameo now. From happy birthday to birth announcements to congrats on whatever, we would love to create a customized video that can be immediately viewed and sent. Not only is it an incredibly thoughtful gift, but it's perfect for when you don't want to deal with the hassles of shopping or you're looking for a custom gift that they've never gotten before. Go to cameo.com/sinisterhood. Where can people find you online?
I'm on Instagram and Threads at Christy M. Wallace and TikTok at Christy or GTFO. Heather?
I'm wherever you find people at Heather versus the World.
As always, the devil rules the airwaves.
Keep it creepy.
Sinner.